Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 62.
And if the hat man that's been hanging out in the corner with me all day because I haven't slept for like 16 hours now, welcome.
Welcome.
I told you to come find us or something. I don't know.
If this episode's awful, it's because we're both very sleep deprived today.
Yeah, because who knew a 2-hour nap would wreck your entire freaking day?
The whole night.
Yeah, your whole day, your whole night, your whole everything.
It's I got 3.5 hours, 4 hours sleep tops, and you got none.
Like, not even deep sleep or whatever you want to call it. That weird, light beginning pre-phase appetizer sleep, whatever you want to call
it. Appetizer sleep.
Yeah, I don't know what else to call it.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about. You know, where you fall asleep for that little tiny bit, and then you wake back up.
Teaser sleep,
yeah. It's all fun stuff coming up for us this weekend.
Yeah.
We're going to go see Jake Graves. That's going to be awesome.
That sounded like you said Jake Graves.
Shaky Graves. We're going to go see him Thursday. And then we're going back to the Bell Mansion possibly on Saturday.
Back to the Bell.
But not for an investigation.
No investigation.
There is a paranormal vendor type event going on during the day. So, who knows? Probably find maybe one or more things for the box.
Oh, no.
The case for the big upcoming weekend after that. You know, the investigation with the dog show. You know, the guys over there at Dark Windows Podcast and Just Normal Mysterious Circumstances and the Brohio Podcast and whatever other shows that might be there we haven't met yet.
It's us. We're one of the other shows. We'll be there. Well, not doing anything. Just listening and investigating, but we'll be there.
Yep. First is going to be a live show of the Brohio Podcast and Mysterious Circumstances with Justin Rimmel.
Yep.
And since that show sold out, they closed it down to the public, so it's a completely private event.
Is the distillery going to be open for drinks and stuff?
I'm sure it's going to be.
Oh, nice.
But I don't know about drinking too much or if at all, because I don't want to be under the influence too much during an investigation.
One drink won't kill you.
So, this week, I don't have a story.
Nope, it's a Sarasode.
It's a Sarasode.
Yay! Where's your button for that?
Oh, you mean my applause button? Damn, that's how fucked up I am. Because, you know, I'm going to give myself a sad trombone because I fucked that up.
Yeah, you give yourself the bone.
But anyhow. Yep. So, what do you have for us this week, Sarah?
This week, I have a case that... It's a little unsettling because it's somebody in law enforcement that you should be able to call on when you need them and them show up, do their job, and protect and serve.
Yeah.
Not the case with this one.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I still have this on this day this week. And actually, there's a little bit more than last week because, you know, I couldn't find anything for May 1st.
That's good, because it's May 8th.
Right. I'm just, you know, reminding everybody that I didn't find anything for May 1st last week.
I was like, it's really good you didn't find it for May 1st.
I haven't started it yet, because I always started off with a date. Jumping the gun.
That's what I do.
I know, we both do that in episodes.
That's the sleepy brain.
Yeah.
Thinking you were thinking, Wednesday is May 8th. May 1st. And it's the 8th. Anyways, please proceed.
So on this day for May 8th, 2024, BCE. No, this would be ACE.
Yeah.
Or something. No, CE, that's what it is. I got it finally.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Something like that. So singer-songwriter Enrique Iglesias was born in Madrid, Spain in 1975. He will be 49 years old today. So happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Two of his better known songs here in the United States is Balamos and Hero.
Oh, yeah, hero.
Let me be your hero, baby.
No.
Something, something, pain. So this is either going to be the best episode or the worst episode because we are so freaking tired right now.
It's like borderline delirium tired.
Yeah, it's like, are these two fucking high? Are they over there doing the devil's lettuce? No, we're just tired as shit right now. All right, so the first James Bond film, Dr. No, premieres in the United States, starring Sean Connery in 1963. In the film that launched James Bond's saga, Agent 007, Sean Connery, battles mysterious Dr. No, a scientific genius bent on destroying the United States space program. As the countdown to disaster begins, Bond must go to Jamaica, where he encounters his beautiful Honey Rider, played by Ursula Andress, to confront the megalomaniac villain in his massive island headquarters.
Okay. That was a whole bunch of word soup right there.
All right, so pay attention because I put this one in here for you.
Okay, I'm paying attention.
Let's see what band that is. If she knows the band by the album title.
Okay.
The album Three Imaginary Boys was released in 1979, and this was the debut album for what band?
Do I know this?
You should know this because the number one single of that song is called Boys Don't Cry.
Oh, The Cure.
Yep.
Three Imaginary Boys? I don't.
That's the name
that of doesn't ring a bell
that's
to me.
That's the name of the album, and that album was released in 1979.
Oh, does The Cure.
President Eisenhower ordered the National Guard to deploy to Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, to escort and protect 9 African-American students during school integrations in 1958. They would also become known as the Little Rock Nine.
Okay.
One of those stories I kind of overlooked for Black History Month, but Greensboro 4 probably isn't as well known as the Little Rock Nine.
Yeah.
Why are you so goddamn mouthy today? Even though on this day, Mike Ilitch would only be hot and ready for Garden City, Michigan in 1959 when he and his wife founded Little Caesars Pizza.
I knew that before you even said. You said his name and you said hot and ready and I knew what you were talking about. Right.
Other than finding Little Caesars Pizza, Mike Ilitch paid Rosa Parks rent for years until she died in 2005 after she was robbed in 1994.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
No, he's part of the silent generation that would do things like that without wanting recognition. So, yeah, real quick, when she got robbed, the city of Detroit moved her into an apartment, and Mike Ilitch said, I'm paying her rent indefinitely.
Good on him.
And this never wasn't known until after he passed away. Guy Curry landed the first 1080 on a skateboard in 2020, breaking Tony Hawk's 900 spin. He would later perform the 1080 again at the X Games in front of Tony Hawk, who came over and celebrated with Curry after landing the trick. Well, the thing is about Guy Curry, he was only 11 years old when he did this.
No shit.
Mm-hmm. Roy Horn of Siegfried and Roy dies on this day in 2020 in Las Vegas, Nevada, from complications of COVID-19. Siegfried and Roy are best known for performing stage magic with White Lions and White Tigers in their shows in Las Vegas. And that is on this day for May 8th, 2024 CE.
Emphasis on the 8th.
Just in case you forgot from when I started.
May 8th.
Okay. So speaking of getting started, are you ready to get started?
Are you ready? Antoinette Frank was born on April 30th, 1971 in Opelousas, Louisiana. She had a very, very tough childhood. Her brother was a fugitive, so she didn't get to see him very much. Her dad was a veteran that had PTSD and was basically in and out of her life. Like, he'd be there for a little while, and then he'd take off. She wouldn't hear from him, see him, and then he'd show back up. And it was just a repetitive cycle that way. Antoinette claimed that her father abused her when he was present and that things were sometimes so bad that she had to find psychological help to deal with her trauma. Or at least try and deal with her trauma. She had always wanted to be a police officer, even from a young age. That was like her dream job. She, during school, became a member of the Opelousas Junior Police and the New Orleans Police Explorers, which I'm assuming is similar to the younger kids that would join your station.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a cadet program. We had the same thing at my station.
Once she turned 20, she applied to the New Orleans Police Department. There were obvious problems with her application from the start. For instance, lying about her previous employment. She was fired from Walmart, but lied about that on the application. New Orleans Police Department should have stopped there once they found out that she lied, you know, because who really needs honest cops anyways?
Right.
But they didn't, but they should have.
Right.
But they didn't. Antoinette was someone that should have never gotten a badge, and it wouldn't take them long to figure that out. During the application process, she failed her psychological evaluation. A psychologist retested her on the 14 key points or characteristics that are used to evaluate potential police officers. She failed miserably and was given the rating unacceptable and below average in almost all of those categories. The same psychologist stated that she should not be hired and that she appeared shallow and would not be a good fit for an officer. Antoinette used a loophole in the system and found a psychiatrist that would see her and declare her fit to be a police officer. She got a second opinion.
Right.
From somebody she knew that...
From fucking Dr. Nick, apparently. Hey, everybody!
Pretty much. Yeah. During all this time, she was depressed that she couldn't find a job. She took off, but left her dad a note saying goodbye, basically. The rest of the note caused alarm to her dad, so he wound up filing a missing persons report and handed over the note. The note said, "I cannot live in this world the way I am, so I will not hold you down with me. I don't know where I will go, but I want to be away from as many people as I can. I was doomed since the day I was born. I see that now. I hate myself, and I hate my life." However, she didn't stay gone very long. She wound up showing up the very next day. Antoinette was hired on February 7th, 1993, to the New Orleans Police Department, mostly because they were extremely short-staffed and were losing cops faster than they were hiring cops. So, kind of a pity hire on their part.
Yeah, it's more of a desperate hire. We just need warm bodies and uniforms, basically.
Yeah. However, again, they didn't have much choice. She showed interest. They needed a cop, so they're like, hey, here's your badge. New Orleans Police Department at the time had about 30 officers charged with corruption, felonies ranging from extortion to rape and kidnapping. Officers were even taking bribes from undercover agents that were posing as cocaine dealers. So, you know, really great department to start your career in law enforcement in.
What year is this again?
93.
Yeah, I figured it'd be a little bit later than that when cocaine dealers and stuff like that were on the books or whatever you want to say. Taking you know, bribes from dealers.
Yeah. Upon her being hired into the department, it didn't take very long for her fellow officers to be like, she was a terrible hire.
Right.
Like, yeah. Terrible police officer. While she was away attending camp, the New Orleans Police Department called her back for more training. She was put on the street as soon as possible and paired with a well-seasoned officer by the name of Ronald, or he goes by Ronnie, so I'm going to call him Ronnie throughout this. Officer Ronald Williams. There was issues right off the bat. Her reports that she filed were not comprehensible whatsoever.
So she was in dotting her T's, crossing her I's and stuff like that?
Correct. Yes.
So I was at least like, I got her this week, two weeks in a row, but I got her this time with it.
Yeah, you did. Other officers were complaining about her irrational behavior, and it was believed within the agency that she'd used her badge to steal from drug dealers. So she was probably a little tweaked out.
And by little?
Allegedly.
So, a little, you probably mean a lot, really.
I mean, a little. On November 25th in 1994, Antoinette responded to a call where a known drug dealer, Rogers LaCause, had been shot. His mom had previously kicked him out of her house because she didn't condone what he was doing and didn't want anything surrounding it happening in her home or on her property. He was taken to the hospital, and once he was released, Antoinette continued to see him. She would take him out, buy him clothes, give him presents, hand him money. She encouraged him to get his GED and warned him that Eastern New Orleans was extremely unsafe. So she wanted to get him out of the situation he was in, basically. She let him know the person he was selling cocaine for worked for the 7th District Police Department. That's the same one that she worked for. Their relationship grew and it became sexual. She was fully aware that she was risking her job. She just didn't give a shit. She'd take him on calls and introduce him as her new trainee or her nephew. She even let him drive her squad car. And she knew that her being with him and giving him everything that she was giving him, letting him use the squad car, was going to ruin her career. But again, she didn't give a shit.
It's like, why would you fight for a second opinion and all this shit if you're just going to be like, oh, fuck this shit. Here, you know, take my car, you know, all my equipment.
She's crazy.
Well, other than that, she's crazy. She's a little bit tweaked out, but still. But anyway.
Yeah. So the two of them, Antoinette and Rogers, went on to start plotting the robbery that they were going to do at Kim An, which was a Vietnamese restaurant. Antoinette and Ronnie Williams took turns staying posted at Kim An as security. So they would take turns, like, staying until they left for the night.
Right.
And then they'd swap. They knew each other well, and he also knew the criminal history of Antoinette's boyfriend. Ronnie was the one that was in charge of securing these, like, side jobs of, like, security. So Antoinette immediately suspected that he was making more money than her because he was the higher up, I guess. It's believed that this is part of the motive that takes place in a case that Antoinette would be tied to later down the line. The Vu family were the owners of the Kim An restaurant at the time and had also grown really close to Antoinette and to Ronnie Williams. They respected both of the officers and treated them like family. So much so that when Antoinette had a birthday, they'd give her a card or they'd, you know, give her a present. If she needed money, they were the first ones in line to help her. Just really giving people.
Yeah, almost seeing her as the kid they didn't have.
Kind of. Antoinette knew that the Vu family weren't very trusting of banks, so they always had cash on them, even storing a large chunk of that in the restaurant. So instead of banks, they used collective financing, which means that they joined finances with other local businesses to help start up like new businesses or expand an already operating one.
Yeah.
They kept it in the local business family instead of putting it in a bank. In the weeks leading up to the robbery, Antoinette and Rogers bought 6 boxes of 9mm bullets from Walmart. She bought them while she was in uniform. Antoinette also stole a 9mm pistol from the evidence room at the police department. She reported it stolen 2 weeks before the robbery.
Fucking dumb!
So an officer went out to take her statement, and her boyfriend Rogers was there. And basically, he'd go on and say, like, oh, that's bullshit. She didn't tell me about anything being stolen.
Right.
Not helping, but thinking he's helping. At 9 p.m. on Friday, March 3rd, 1995, Antoinette called the restaurant to see if she was needed for guard duty that night. The Vu family told her they did not need her since Ronnie Williams was already there. And since Ronnie was there, he was the person in charge of the extra assignments. He had started to cut back Antoinette's hours at the restaurant. And this absolutely enraged Antoinette. She completed her shift at the police department at 11 p.m. She went home, changed her clothes, and then picked up Rogers before they drove to the restaurant. Antoinette went into the restaurant by herself, ordering a couple of pops, one for herself and one for her nephew, who we now know is Rogers. Not her real nephew, just that's
right.
her cover.
Yeah, that was just her excuse, basically.
Right. He was, sitting in the car waiting. She made small talk about going to the midnight screening at the local movie theater, and then she left. During their small talk, one of the Vus relayed that it had been a very slow night, so they were going to close early. Mrs. Vu went home, and her children stayed behind to clean up, so now there were 6 people inside the restaurant. There were the 4 Vu children, Ronnie, and Antoinette. Antoinette wound up leaving shortly thereafter with the drinks she went in to grab. About 15 minutes after Mrs. Vu left, she called in and ordered a beefsteak dinner. She claimed they missed the movie, so they were going to grab some food and then head home instead. Ronnie Williams told the Vu family to quit letting Antoinette eat there for free. He felt she was taking advantage of them and their kindness, and she 100% was.
Yeah, totally sounds like what it is.
Ronnie also told Miss Vu's daughter, Chow, that she was extremely naive and she couldn't trust anyone, and that included Antoinette. As the others were cleaning, Chow went to the back of the restaurant to count out money and then come back up front to pay Ronnie. what he was owed for that day's service. When she went to hand Ronnie his money, she noticed that Antoinette was walking up to the door to what she assumed was to pick up her food. But she wound up finding out very quickly that Antoinette had no intention of just picking up food and leaving. Antoinette and Rogers decided to eat inside, even though they knew that the Vus were cleaning to leave for the night. Chow grew suspicious of Rogers immediately. He had gold teeth, and that was relatively associated with gangs back then, especially in that area. Not like today, where pretty much anybody under the sun could go into a jewelry shop and get a grill.
Right.
You know, Mrs. Vu's son, Kuok, made a comment that Rogers kept staring at him and how uneasy it was making him feel. Antoinette and Rogers didn't finish their food. They got up and left and stood outside of the restaurant for a while before getting in Antoinette's cruiser and driving off. Chow became wary when Antoinette kept calling and came to the restaurant for a second time. So she's like using her spidey senses, like something's not right. She called out for Ronnie and her brothers to lock the doors and not open them. And then Chow wound up grabbing the money and hiding it inside of a microwave. And while doing so, her brother called out to her and told her to get up to the front. When Chow got out there, she saw Antoinette walk up to the door and then start like shaking the shit out of it, trying to open the door.
Right.
Unfortunately, locking the doors did no good since Antoinette had stolen Chow's keys like weeks prior. Antoinette and Rogers entered the restaurant. Antoinette walked up to Chow and pushed her back towards the kitchen, stating that they needed to talk. Ronnie was standing behind the bar and began to move towards Chow and her brother's direction. Chow's brother Kuok began hearing a lot of gunshots coming from Ronnie Williams' direction. So the siblings grabbed each other and ran to the first place that they could find to hide in, which was a room-sized cooler. Once inside the cooler, they called out to their other siblings to come with them, but they weren't able to. Chow let the officers know later on that the cooler had a partial glass exterior so she could see Antoinette and Rogers running back and forth like they were looking for something. Perhaps they were running into the front to see if the cops had been called or alerted in some way. They could have been looking for any money that, you know, would have been hidden in the restaurant. They're not sure. Antoinette was seen standing in the middle of the kitchen with a 9mm pistol in her hand, aiming it at Chow and Kwok's brother and sister, who were huddled together and praying on the floor. The sister was shot, and when found, was still in a position of prayer with her arms and forehead on the floor, kneeling down. The brother was shot in both his chest and back, and Antoinette heard him trying to speak and unloaded two more shots to his head. Officer Ronnie Williams was found face down behind the bar in a large pool of blood. He had been shot once in the back and twice in the head at point-blank range. Before Antoinette and Rogers left the scene, Rogers took Officer Williams' gun and wallet before driving off in the New Orleans police officer's vehicle. Once things settled down, Chow and Kuok came out from the freezer and immediately saw Officer Williams' body laying there. Chow said as soon as she saw Officer Williams' body on the floor that every last bit of confidence she had that her brother and sister were still alive was gone. She knew. She said since he had died protecting them while they hid in the freezer, he wasn't protecting her brother and sister. So she knew that they stood no chance against Antoinette. Chow tried calling the police repeatedly, but wasn't able to get through. She called a friend and asked them to keep calling for her. The friend asked why, but she wasn't able to respond since the phone battery died in that instant. So,
of course it
did. Yeah. Of all the times.
Of all the cliche things that happen in the real world.
Yep. Kuok came out of the freezer and was going to take off to a friend's house and let them know what happened and to get a hold of the police. But he didn't make it that far. He turned the corner and Chow heard a scream come out of her brother that she had never heard from him before. Kuok had just found the bodies of his brother and sister. Kuok's 911 call had played during the trial, and in it he stated that his family's restaurant and that his siblings and a police officer were dead inside. He stated that they were killed by another officer named Antoinette. He said she came in with a friend and robbed their restaurant. At 1:52 a.m., the first officer actually showed up to see what the fuck happened. Chow was hiding in the cooler again when she saw the officer pull up. She didn't immediately come out because she knew Antoinette was also driving a police cruiser.
Right.
And it could have been Antoinette.
Her coming back.
Yeah. Luckily, it wasn't. She heard more sirens coming and she knew that she was safe to get up and get out. And she ran outside and into the arms of a female detective. After all of this, Antoinette had come back to the restaurant and started to question Chow where she and her brother had hid and what happened to her sister and brother. And Chow questioned Antoinette right back and was like, "You were here. Why are you asking me this?
Like, you stupid bitch. You're the one that fucking did this. Why are you asking me all this stuff?"
Yeah. When Chow was questioned by another officer, she was so scared she could only speak in her native language, which was Vietnamese. But once she calmed down, she was able to tell them in English exactly what happened. The officers didn't know at this point that Antoinette was one of the shooters. They just thought she was there to help solve a crime, as she could have been one of the key witnesses if she was there. When the officers questioned Antoinette about what she saw, she said she had been getting a drink in the kitchen when she first heard gunshots coming from the dining room. She said that she tried to gather all the employees and push them out to safety through the back door. However, officers knew something was off as Antoinette brought up Rogers. They knew in that instant she was not just a witness, she was a suspect. 3 weeks after the murders, Officer Ronnie Williams' wife called the police to let them know that someone had used Ronnie's gas card on March 4th, which was the same day that he was killed. Like, used it after he would have already died. Detectives went to the night manager of the gas station that the officer's card was used at and found out that the person that used the card was not Ronnie. It was Rogers the cause. Rogers was identified via picture by the night manager. He had spent just $15 in gas, and timestamps would later prove that it was about 15 minutes after Ronnie and the Vu siblings were murdered. Antoinette was arrested right there in the restaurant. She wound up confessing to the killing of the Vu siblings after hours of being interrogated. She did not confess to killing Officer Ronnie Williams. She told the detectives that Rogers was the one that shot and killed him. When Antoinette was asked why she did it, she said that Rogers told her to, and she didn't know what else to do at that point. How about just say no?
Right? You just don't?
Rogers confessed to being inside of the restaurant while the robbery and murders took place, but he did not confess to shooting anyone. He said Antoinette is the one that shot all three victims. So they turned on each other, as one does, I guess.
Yeah. Save your own skin, get a lesser charge.
I guess. Rogers was found guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder and sentenced to death, but he was later retried and his sentence was reduced to 3 counts of first-degree murder with life in prison. Antoinette was also found guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder and sentenced to death. At Rogers' trial, he said Antoinette was a very strange person. He said it was like she was 3 different people.
Officer Tweaker and Weirdo. But not the good kind of weirdos that comes and listen to us every week.
Yeah. A psychiatrist actually agreed with that during their testimony. And Antoinette was given an official diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder with antisocial tendencies. She was a sociopath.
I was hoping he had a big rubber stamp. Crazy!
Correct. So, at 8 p.m. on a random Monday night, officers received a call about human bones that were found under a house by a neighborhood dog. The dog gave the bones to an 11-year-old boy, just like, "Here, take it and throw it for me," thinking it's a stick or something, right? The boy took the bones to his dad. The dad called the police and was like, "Hey, my son just handed me human bones."
Right.
Like, what do I do about this? The house that the phone call came from was previously Antoinette's old home that she once occupied, that her father would drop in and out of as he pleased. They had found a partial skull, rib bones, a portion of the lower jaw, segments of a spine, as well as a partial denture. The father had been renovating the home for a few months and then seemingly just disappeared. And when Antoinette was asked, like, "Yo, where's your dad?" she kind of just shrugged it off, like, you know, he comes and goes as he wants to, like I said in the beginning. She said he took off. I don't know when he's coming back or if he's coming back. Investigators found out that there was a bullet hole in the skull piece that they had. So whoever it was murdered.
Right.
Or self-canceled.
Self-canceled. Unalived themselves.
Unalived themselves. They also noted that the skull belonged to a male and that the age of the skull in particular would have been around the same age as Antoinette's father when he vanished.
Oh, so he became a permanent resident of that house. Maybe. I'm just guessing here.
Yeah. The coroners and investigators tried to get Antoinette's father's military records, which would have had his dental records.
Right.
Since they might have been able to get a partial match. Unfortunately for them, when they received word back from the military, they were told that his records had been lost in a fire. So that was a dead end. However, Antoinette could have reopened that dead end. She right. could have given them DNA and been like, here, you know, take my blood, take the DNA from it, whatever you get off of the bones, compare them. Except she refused to give a blood sample.
Of course she did.
So there was no DNA testing. But the officers strongly believe that the bones that were found under that house were the bones of Antoinette's father, that she killed him. Although they can't prove it because they don't have DNA evidence. And with that, Antoinette Frank is still in prison. She is still on death row. And if she is executed, she will be the first woman that has been executed on Louisiana's death row since 1942.
Well,
it's been a long time.
I don't know, though. The one from 1942 almost sounds like our territory to find out what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't look into that.
I didn't think you had ever considered that.
The Vu family kept their restaurant open for another decade before it was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. And they wound up selling that location, and they moved. They reopened the restaurant in a new town, and the town they moved to, they said, made them feel much, much safer.
Well, that's good. Probably being out of New Orleans in general.
Yeah.
As, residents. Because, you know, as residents, probably much safer. But when you're tourists, you know, you stay to the touristy parts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But that's that. It's Antoinette Frank and her being a fucking crazy bitch. Killing her dad, probably.
With strong confidence, she probably did.
With strong confidence.
I think that's what the term that the FBI uses.
Well, I have strong confidence in the fact that she was a crazy bitch.
Yep.
Crazy
bitch. Strong confidence. She's 100% crazy.
Yep.
That was my big rubber stamp.
The big rubber stamp?
Yep.
But that's my story for this week. Yep. Bad cop gone badder.
Yep. It's kind of irritating for me because, you know, you take an oath, you know, in public service and you're supposed to uphold it, basically. Mm-hmm. And it still irritates me when shit like this comes up.
Yep. Especially when you know that all that shit could have been prevented by not hiring her in the first place when the fucking psychiatrist was like, she failed every category of all these tests that you have to pass in order to be a police officer. Yep. Don't hire. We get your you know, you're short staffed and you desperately need people. Don't fucking hire. There's somebody else that will come and apply that actually can pass the test.
Right. You look at Detroit for years, you know, Detroit Fire, Detroit Police, how short staffed they were for years, but still. And they were probably stretched even thinner.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure they still are now.
Probably. That's my story.
I want to try that again.
But that's my story. I really didn't. I was going to let you just leave it that way.
No, I could still.
It was a sleepy episode.
Yeah, it was. Not much to say afterwards. You know, Facebook group, and that's where we post pictures of the show. All, you know, other announcements along with it, and when we're not going to be having an episode or how long we're not going to be on episodes.
So basically just
teasers if you and stuff.
If you listen to us and you're not in the Facebook group, what are you doing? That's where everything happens. That's where all of our shit goes down.
That's where I post all the stupid shit.
Yeah. and then our friends post stupid shit and I don't know where I was going with that.
And then also, you know, Wednesday, Thursdays on Twitch, 8 p.m. Eastern time, but not this Thursday because we will not be home. We will be at a concert.
Oh, yeah.
So you ready to close the Emporium up for the day and go home and go to sleep?
Oh, yeah.
So until next time.
Good night. Remember to creep it real.
Good night.
Okay, bye. Please go and check out our website at macabreemporiumpodcast.com. Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast. Chow let officers know later on that the cooler had a partial glass exterior so she could see Antoinette. God damn it!
This might be a raw episode of its fucking self.
I can't.